Indeed, there is. You kind of like one or the other. Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Tasia Custodi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're so glad to have you. We were just, well, I was just talking about Diet Cola, and I don't even drink it, but I'm interested in it. I don't know why. Gosh, why y'all?
Oh, because Ray Charles is awesome.
if anyone remembers that commercial, you got the right one, baby. I was trying to remember, what was that for? Why do I know that? Ray Charles commercial for Diet Pepsi, circa 1990 through 1993. Thank you, Wikipedia. Well, we're not here for that. We're here to talk about technology news, and we have a lot of it. Who's with me?
I am with you.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Roger.
Let's go.
All right.
3 for 4.
We got Roger, Rob, Tasia, Sarah, Joe in the back. And let's go ahead and do this. I will count myself in. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Miranda Janelle, Justin Zellers, Pepper Geezy, and our new patron, Brian. Welcome, Brian. On this episode of DTNS, Microsoft says, fine, we'll separate Teams from 365 for some of you. Hue adds more security to its smart home line. And Tasia Custodi tells us why YouTube might be hurting your viewership, even if you don't know why. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, August 31st, 2023. From Studio Snickerdoodle, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us is Tasia Custodi, host of AI Named the Show. You might remember from DTNS Experiment Week. Also, Talk Techie to Me, those podcasts, and YouTuber. Welcome, Tasia.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm joining you all from hot Scottsdale, Arizona.
Ooh, it is hot. Yeah, you were telling us before the show, something like 114 Fahrenheit. That's hot. All others bow down to that hotness. All right, let's get right into the show, starting with the quick hits. After last week's highly anticipated launch of the more functional web version of Threads, Meta is testing another highly demanded feature, and that is search. Fully searched post text is currently available in Australia and New Zealand, with a wider rollout to other English-speaking countries currently planned. The company also says it's working on supporting additional languages. In a statement, a spokesperson said, quote, "We are actively listening to the community's feedback and working on more features to improve the search experience."
Motorola has officially unveiled two new Moto G phones launching in September. The Moto G84 5G launches September 1st and the Moto G54 5G launches September 6th. Both September launches are slated for India. However, the Moto G54 5G was recently spotted in a U.S. Federal Communications Commission listing and will hopefully see a U.S., if not worldwide, launch in the near future.
Google's AI-powered Search Generative Experience, or SGE, which began open testing in the U.S. back in May, has now expanded the feature to India and Japan. In India, it will be available in both English and Hindi, which is a widely spoken language in the region, and Japanese in Japan, with voice input also enabled. Unlike Microsoft's Bing's AI chatbot assistant, SGE runs directly from the search bar rather than as a separate section.
The Federal Trade Communications essentially told ISPs too bad, so sad when it rejected a request to eliminate an upcoming requirement for internet service providers to list all of their monthly fees. Five trade groups representing U.S.-based broadband providers petitioned the FCC in January to scrap the requirement before it goes into effect. The FCC, however, stated that the rules would be implemented without significant changes. Every consumer needs transparent information when making decisions about what internet service offerings to make or which makes most sense for families and households. No one wants to be hit with charges they didn't ask for or they did not expect.
I love that. ISP saying, do we have to tell them, though? FCC said, yeah, you have to tell them. According to a Bloomberg report, Apple is testing 3D printers to make the stainless steel chassis for upcoming Apple Watch 9. Apple Watch chassis are currently made by cutting slabs of metal into the right shape. The 3D printing methodology would, if it's true, reduce time needed to make the devices and also the material being used. Apple may also apply the 3D printing process to the next iteration of the titanium enclosed Apple Watch Ultra, that's the big one, sometime next year. And those are the quick hits. All right, Rob, let's talk about Microsoft. What's going on?
Well, let's talk about some antitrust stuff. So on October 1st, Microsoft will be separating Teams from Microsoft 365 and Office 365 suites in the European Economic Area and also Switzerland. This follows a formal EU antitrust investigation opened last month over Microsoft bundling Teams into its enterprise offering. Teams rival Slack filed a complaint about 3 years ago over the same issue. At the time, Slack alleged that Microsoft had illegally tied its Microsoft Teams product to Office and is force installing it for millions, blocking its removal and hiding the true cost of to enterprise customers.
All right. So as a customer, you can buy the new package. You know, if you're in these regions, you can buy the new package without Teams and save €3 per month. Existing customers have the option to remain with their current plan, kind of grandfathered in type thing. For new customers, if you want Teams, that's available for €5 per month. Now, the EU investigation is still ongoing. And Rob, I know you've got some thoughts on what Microsoft is doing. Is it doing what it needs to do here? Is it in the clear?
I don't know that it's in the clear. They're probably going to get, you know, hit with a sanction. But the thing is, Microsoft, and they know this, they've got years, actually, they've got decades of knowledge that tells them when we bundle stuff, people use the stuff that we bundle. So this is one of those calculated decisions. We're going to bundle this probably knowing that eventually we're going to get whacked. But by that point, we're on everybody's system. People are using us. So let's just pay the fine, having reaped all the benefits of the bundling for the years that we did it up until this point.
Mm. Well, I mean, you mentioned that, yeah, when bundled software is provided, it's often the most convenient option and people use it. But yeah, if you have a dominant market share, which Microsoft obviously has been battling with a variety of Office suites for some time, you're going to get scrutiny like this. I remember when Slack first said, hey, you know, what's going on with Microsoft Teams here? This isn't fair. I mean, Slack was not owned by Salesforce at the time that it complained about this. And that's perhaps why we haven't heard a lot more crowing about from Slack. I am a Slack user. I don't really connect it to too many third-party apps, although you do have a lot of options that way. So it isn't so much that Microsoft is offering its version of something that you couldn't get elsewhere. Teja, where do you fall on this? Are you a Teams user or Slack user or either?
I used to use both for companies that I worked with. So it was kind of internal to their programs. I love Slack, was a big Slack user. It's easy to see both sides because you want to see it from the competitive standpoint, which, as we know, is what the very smart Slack lawyers said was, hey, this is against EU regulations. But you can also see it from Microsoft's side being like, well, if we're the biggest and we're the best and we want to just bundle it in, like, let's just give it to everyone. I think where it lies for me is like people want an option to either opt in or opt out. And I think that's like a big option across the board. So what's going to be interesting to see is like there's some talk about some confusion around this now. Is the option just to have like Teams on your own for the few euros a month? Like, is that just going to be only available to like bigger customers and not say you or me that may just have a small team that just wants to communicate via Teams? How many times can I say Teams?
Microsoft says as many as you would like.
And they appreciate that. And here's the thing. Like I said, Microsoft, they know that if they don't bundle it, you know, Teams was enough different than Link, its predecessor, that if people are saying, well, if I got to buy this new thing, I might as well go ahead and look at something like Slack or look at other options that are out there on the market. But when it just comes with the stuff you already are purchasing, you're more apt to, well, we've got this in the box. So let's just go ahead and take a look at it. And that's where the problem comes in for a company like Slack. Slack can't do that. Slack can't just bundle their stuff with the biggest enterprise productivity suite, you know, that exists. Microsoft can. So it gives them an unfair advantage. Mm-hmm. From Microsoft's standpoint, it's like, well, we're going to exercise that unfair advantage as long as we legally can. And then when the heat comes, we'll change. But by that time, you know, maybe a bit of the damage is already done.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, all right. So Microsoft is making some concessions in the European market where it has been forced to do so. This isn't necessarily over. This is Microsoft saying, we good? Here, we're giving people other options. And you mentioned, Tasia, it's hard to argue with something where you're like, well, I'm already here in this office suite. This is a great option for me. I think the problem is that when we come into antitrust issues like this, people say, well, there are other options though. And if you don't know that there are other options, then that's where, you know, the unfair market advantage comes in. All right, Rob, let's talk about smart homes, shall we?
Absolutely. So Signify announced a new security camera that can connect to Philips Hue's line of smart lights. The Philips Hue secure cameras and sensors for home security support 1080p video monitoring, plus night vision and motion trigger notifications. They connect using Hue Bridge, like other Hue devices. Two-way talk is supported, so the cameras can be paired with Hue lights and sound alarms for privacy folks. And then encryption is also included to keep video clips and snapshots private, and recognition on device to let camera recognize people, pets, and packages.
A security center will also be part of the Philips Hue app to control various devices. It includes a take action screen. That's where you can activate an alarm that flashes the lights, for example, or sounds a siren, or contacts local authorities if you're really in a jam, among other options. Some features require paid plans. Those start at about $4 per month. Anybody with a Hue account can connect up to 10 cameras linked to a bridge. I happen to have a bunch of Hue cameras, but I don't have, Hue lights, but I don't have a camera, but I do have a bridge. So this is kind of nice for anybody who's got half that system built up, supposed to be pretty compatible. The Philips Hue Secure line will be available this fall. We don't have a specific date otherwise, but coming soon. I mean, gosh, it's September, starting tomorrow. The Hue Secure wired camera is $200, $230 if you include a desktop stand. The battery version, so if you want to, you know, put it somewhere that's not necessarily near an outlet, $250. Floodlight camera is $350. Contact sensors are $40 for one, $70 for a two-pack, and various mounts and other add-on hardware can be purchased for $15 up to about $50. All right, so before the show, Roger had mentioned, gosh, you know, these security cameras sound kind of expensive. This is also the Hue line, so there's a little smart home prestige here, I suppose. Let's go around the horn a little bit and talk about home security and what we're all using. Rob, let's start with you.
So they are on the pricier end, but the thing you get with this is that there's a lot of folks who already have standardized on Hue. So they're already like, you're using it. So this is just, you can just go buy this camera and plug it into an existing system, as compared to having yet another system that you've got to control and do all the kind of things that you have to do to, you know, to get it the way
right.
That
you've got
to
the app, you kind of know how it works.
Right. So like I said, so yeah, a little pricier than some of its competition, but the fact that it's just going to be so plug and play to what you may already be using, you may just say, let me just go buy that, because you don't have to have the hassle now of literally setting up another system inside of your home automation setup.
Tasia, what about you? Security cameras, where do you fall on this? Do you have one? Do you need one? Do you want this one?
Oh, I want this one. But I do have one. I used to have two and one broke. I have the Arlo Pro. So this is not a commercial for them. It broke right outside of the year like coverage too, which just really grinds your gears. But anyway, I have Philips Hue lights and I absolutely love them, and I use them with like all my different smart devices. So the thing I'm most excited about here, and to touch on the price thing, I feel like price is in the eye of the beholder, because right now, like if we want to talk about owning like market ownership, this is massive. If you like, for me, I'm so excited about the secure contact sensor that they're coming out with, because it's going to send you notifications when like a door is opened or closed. But beyond that, you can also link it to your lights. So when you get home, you can open the door and a light can come on. And to me, it's like a really affordable way to customize your home in that smart space without paying to customize a home. Like if you think about what people spend, I'm sure, on like custom home buildouts and putting all of this smart tech embedded in their home's ecosystem. Now it's like, no, for the rest of us, you're renting a tiny apartment. You're just moving into like an already existing 1970s house, something like that. Now for a few hundred dollars and a couple bucks a month, essentially, you can set up and customize a system, one complete system in one secure app, loving it. Total game changer. And I've been looking for a way to switch from the system I have. And so this with the contact sensor, I think is going to be my new jam. We'll update you guys after it comes out in the fall.
Please do. Yeah. I don't currently have, well, I'm sort of floating around home-wise right now, but in my old house, especially for the DTNS Live With It show, one of the most popular options that people kept suggesting is Sarah should get a security camera system. But I was like, you know, I'm behind a gate. I'm up a long driveway. You know, there's really not a lot of, I mean, I might catch like a raccoon or a skunk on my front porch. Hopefully that's it. But it didn't totally make sense for me. But yeah, Teja, like you mentioned, especially if you move around a lot, this kind of stuff is easy to set up, pretty portable. I mean, even the other day, we were talking about something here on DTNS where it was, thermostat that could know when you opened your window and then the thermostat would adjust accordingly. And I was like, a smart window? And Tom said, no, Sarah, it's like a sensor. You know, like there are little things for all sorts of parts of your house.
You know, I mean, you're technically not wrong. The sensor makes the window smart.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the more of this, the better. I'm with you. I'm in the Hue ecosystem. Although I have some LifeX lights as well. But yeah, I mean, this is all moving in the right direction. Speaking of moving in the right direction, this is almost the lead that was buried. As previously promised, Philips Hue Bridge is finally being updated to support the new smart home standard Matter. A software update will roll out in September, and that lets you as a user connect your Hue system with other Matter devices and apps. Makes it all that much smarter. This applies to even the oldest Hue bulbs that launched way back in 2012. All right. If you missed Tom's How to Make a Great Podcast class, it was a hit. And people said, what? I missed it. And I'm mad about that. I would like to be part of the next one. If you missed it, good news. You can still get the online course in our DTNS Patreon store. Tom explains the basics of podcast producing a little bit more than the basics because, you know, Tom's a bit of a veteran and shares his experiences on what makes a really great podcast actually great. A lot of learning you can do there. You can download the class or stream it over at patreon.com/DTNS/shop. Well, for a lot of folks, YouTube is not a platform for personal content. I mean, it might be a platform to share personal content. It's also a revenue stream for many, though. But if that is your situation, what happens if the platform, like YouTube, has some sort of a bug that causes your viewership numbers to drop like a rock or a sack of bricks? Teja, you've been dealing with this problem on your own channel for some time. So let's talk about what the problem is and what you've done.
Yeah, I noticed on August 5th, you know, everything was hunky-dory. And come August 5th, my revenue just completely fell off of a cliff. You just see this nosedive down. You never want to see an arrow down and to the right.
No, certainly not. But especially not one that's where you go, hello, am I online still?
Correct. So for the first week, I honestly thought, you know, sometimes stuff happens on the back end with YouTube analytics and it corrects itself after a few days and not a big deal. And after a week of it happening, I grew more concerned and couldn't see anything amiss on the back end of my channel. I was looking at ads still running. I was looking at where my traffic was coming from. Nothing seemed awry. And it wasn't until 12 days later, so August 17th, I think it was, that I got a banner on the top of my analytics page that said that my ads had been limited to one or more of my videos due to invalid traffic. And you guys, this was the first time I had ever even heard that term, invalid traffic.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it meant.
Did YouTube offer an explanation on, you know, was there a little question mark that you click and find out more?
There was. I think it's like a little I. And so, of course, I went down that rabbit hole, and YouTube basically describes invalid traffic as any activity at all on your channel that does not come from a real user or a user with genuine interest. So obviously off the bat, you think of things like if you're like bot farms, like you're incentivizing or buying, sure, having people buy views exactly and clicks on your content. But they also list a couple other things that they include in invalid traffic, which is things like friends or contacts, letting your playlist run all day long, which is weird and I've never done. And they also say if you announce to your viewers that, you know, you should watch this ad and click this ad, then that would boost the ad traffic and you're not allowed to do that, which, again, I've also not done that. So besides that, I mean, there really wasn't too much more info, except when I did a bit more digging on what they call invalid traffic, and this is the biggest hiccup to me and biggest catch, is they say, and I'm going to pull it right from their site, that sometimes creators may find their channels are affected by invalid traffic even if they're not intentionally driving it. So even if a creator isn't aware that activity they've received is a result of invalid traffic, YouTube is essentially saying it's still the creator's fault. I don't, you maybe can make that make sense to me. I've been in this hole for weeks trying to make that make sense, that one of the biggest tech companies in the world would say it's a creator's fault and the creator has to know where the traffic is coming from. So I reached out to YouTube support and, you know, circles, guys, just, we went in circles about it. And I was also told the exact same thing, not once, but twice in my chat with support, was, you, under no circumstance, it is across the board that YouTubers, the creators are responsible and the creators are to control where their traffic is coming from. I can't make heads or tails of it.
I mean, as you explain it this way, I wouldn't be able to either. I mean, I guess the only, and I don't do a lot of stuff on YouTube, I mean, I'm really only a YouTube consumer and not a creator, but this sounds a lot like, I don't know, you know, remember back in the days of the old Twitter of yesteryear, where sometimes you look at your follower count and you're like, I lost like 1,500 followers overnight. What the heck? Oh, they're doing some sort of a bot sweep kind of thing. Doesn't really matter for a lot of social networks, where it's like, sure, follower counts, you know, hold some cachet, but it's not a monetary thing. Things are a little different over at X right now. But on YouTube, like you're explaining, Tasia, it very much is. And for the company to say, well, you know, these people were fake, or, you know, you've got friends who are, I don't know, keeping a stream open all day. I mean, how many people would even be able to do that if you even had a good friend who says, yes, I'll do you a solid? Like, that's not a real revenue stream. So what do you as a creator do at this point?
Well, I went through all the channels that I possibly could go through, and I immediately got on our good friend Google, and I started looking into, like, what does it actually mean? Because, like, cool that that's the YouTube definition of invalid traffic, but, like, what do we do now? And I found a lot of other creators this is happening to. I have a running list. And basically, besides reaching out to YouTube support, this is part of the problem, is we don't have any other avenues. We are just trying to make enough noise right now that someone will take us seriously and someone will, from YouTube, acknowledge that this is indeed a bug, because what's happening on the back end of my channel is echoed amongst other creators, where there's no weird influx, there's no new traffic source, there's nothing that, even if somebody was targeting me maliciously and I had no idea, I would see that in my analytics on the back end on a video. They won't even tell us what video or videos are affected. So how can we solve the problem, Sarah? If you won't even tell us what it's affecting, but it's our fault. How are we supposed to fix it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you've been in touch with YouTube as much as the channels that are offered to you. You're not the only person who's having the issue. I don't know, Rob. What would you do if this were you?
This is one of those situations where, you know, hey, you got a problem, so we're going to ding your monetization. What's the problem? We can't tell you. What do I do to fix it? It's not our problem. It's your issue. You need to fix it, but we're not going to tell you what it is, where it's coming from. So I'm just thinking, you know, you literally get, you know, if you've got internet beef with someone, could they set, you know, in their newsletter, or could they just say, hey, I want everybody right at this time to go over to this channel and start watching all the ads, knowing that the algorithm or you know, something programmatically is going to say, hey, this is invalid traffic. Let's demonetize or let's make all of this traffic invalid. This is just when you deal with when you're living in someone else's sandbox. And it's like, it's one of those things, you know, what do you do? It's like, hopefully eventually they're going to come out with something, but I can understand your frustration, because it's like, you probably want to fix it, but you can't fix it because you don't know what to fix.
Rob, you summed it up in a minute of my hour long circle chat with YouTube. I'll put supports in quotes, because it was just like that exact thing. And when I said to the person I was chatting with, so you're telling me like it could not be my fault, but I'm being punished for it, even if it's nothing I did, whether a bug or whether somebody's maliciously attacking me and way too many others for this to be just like a malicious attack. And the response I got was, I'm sorry you feel that way. Which, yeah. By the way, lesson for everybody, that's not an apology. You don't apologize for somebody's feelings when you made them feel that way.
It's almost worse than nothing at all.
Right. You want to see me enraged?
Sorry, you feel offended.
I know. I was like, girl, please. If you want to see me offended now, like you've pushed the button. But yeah, so it's just, it's left us with our hands tied. And to me, there's just too many of us that this is happening to, that it's something where if this would not have happened to me on August 5th, I wouldn't have known it's an issue. And that's also not okay to me at this point. So it's still ongoing for me. We're at the end of August. I still have lost my personal effects have been cut. My personal ad revenue has been cut more than 76% off of a cliff.
Wow.
And it's significant. And okay. So yeah, for me, like that's one of my revenue streams. Thank God. And by the way, still extremely significant. Like YouTube went with the ad revenue alone from like my third top earning tier for me in a month down to almost nothing now. Like I might be able to buy a coffee at the day with what I'm getting now. And so there's a lot of YouTubers that this is their full-time gig. This has completely decimated them. And if this doesn't happen to you, you wouldn't know this could even be a thing. And so when I started doing all the research on this, I realized like this is a known issue since November of 2022. YouTube does not want to admit it, because I feel like this is allegedly my opinion, YouTube, don't come for me, please, not any more than you already have. But in my opinion, they don't want to acknowledge that there is an issue on the back end of their system, whether a bug or too sensitive to something and I don't know what, which I would still consider a bug, because that puts them at risk with their advertisers now. So if their advertisers know there's something going on with their algorithm, how can the advertisers trust them that actual clicks are clicks and actual views are views? And it creates a whole other issue. But for the creators, like we just really want some transparency, and we want to be able to talk to real humans at these companies, like even outside of YouTube. Like this is not okay that this can happen. And I don't want any company to hide behind something that it's your fault, even if it's not your fault, deal with it. It's not acceptable to me. So what we're all trying to do now is band together and just make enough noise that everybody knows what's going on, whether it's happening to you or not, whether you're a YouTuber or not. Let's just make some noise about it and hope that we can have an actual discussion with YouTube about what's happening and what we can all do to come to a win-win solution for both parties. Because they're still running ads on my account, by the way, you guys. So my revenue's dropped over 76% and ads are very much still running. And some creators have said that it's two second tier ads or something, or like not, you know, the big ads. But like even today, I just put a video out on this exact topic. Very meta of me to put a YouTube video out on something that YouTube's doing to me. But like some of the ads I had on there were for like Disney Plus and like pretty big ads, I think. Like those aren't second tier ads. So, and other creators I've talked to have had Apple ads running. Those aren't second tier ads. So it's wild that that's still running on my account, but my revenue's been hit that bad. And some creators, it's between 70 to 90%. So some creators, it's almost gone down to zero.
Well, Tasia, thank you so much for letting us know, you know, for those of us who aren't monetizing YouTube content, or at least not to the point where it becomes a livelihood, a reminder that, you know, some of the most prolific content creators that you enjoy, you know, they make more than just buying coffee from this. You know, this is how they live their lives, and it's fun for everybody as long as it works. Sounds like in YouTube's case, there's something a little bit broken here. If you have experienced anything like this or you've heard about that, and you want to send us an email explaining what the deal is, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com would be the place to do it. We thank you very much in advance. And Tasia, for now, thank you so much for being on the show with us. It's been a real pleasure. And we certainly hope that your YouTube woes get turned around soon. And I will buy you a coffee next time I see you.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. And hopefully next time I'm on, I'll have a better update.
Indeed. In the meantime, let folks know where they can keep up with everything that you do.
You can, of course, find me on YouTube. I'm youtube.com/@TasiaCustodi. I'm Tasia Custodi on all of the things, everywhere. X, or if you're like me and still calling it Twitter, you can find me there too. I'm on Instagram @TasiaCustodi. You can go to TasiaCustodi.com and just find me. Reach out. Even if you just want to say, hi, sorry this is happening to you, I'll take a virtual hug. Or if it's happening to you and you want a shoulder to cry on, I got you.
Well, we're so glad that you joined us today. Do come back soon. This was a real pleasure, and so much good feedback from Experiment Week. And yeah, we're looking forward to more of that.
Thanks, guys.
So patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet, where products are getting a press at the IFA conference in Berlin and reminding us that form factors can still be wacky.
Oh, don't you love a good wacky form factor? I do. For now, just a reminder, we do the show live Monday through Friday. We're on demand, of course, but if you can join us live, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC is when we do the show. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We are back doing it all again tomorrow with Rob DeMillo and Len Peralta joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Delightful show, everybody.
Good show.
Yeah, good stuff. If you're thinking, that was a great show and I have just the title suggestion, go on over to showbot.tv/DTNS2, see what titles are there and vote for the ones that you like for DTNS. And also, Good Day Internet, which we're getting into right now. Rob, tell us more about weird form factors.
So LG's Stand By Me Go is a $1,000 27-inch suitcase TV tablet thingy. It's quite interesting. Previously, only in LG's Korean market, the Stand By Me Go came to the U.S. earlier this month and got some new attention in Berlin at a corner of its booth in IFA 2023. But nobody seems to understand what it's for. The Verge notes, along with the headline, LG suitcase TV is sturdy as it is bizarre. The tablet is optimized for touchscreen, which rotates from portrait into landscape and can be set at any angle from straight to upwards or straight forwards. The TV is currently available for pre-order on LG's US site with an estimated ship date of October 16th. And I'm looking at this thing and I have no idea. It looks like a 1992 Mission Impossible briefcase or something like that. Something Ethan Hunt would be using, and it's going to blow up when he gets done using it. It's quite It's quite odd looking, and I'm trying to understand what the use case for this would be.
Okay, but I have a use case for you.
Device. Okay, Tasia, you go. You go.
Sorry, Sarah. You could go. I just want to tell you.
No, no, it's fine. It's fine. You first, please.
My use case would be, and not at this price point, but let's call this a first model. Second screens for travelers. I don't care so much about the whole TV aspect that they're pitching about it. Like, that's like weird to me. I don't need to like walk around with a television in a suitcase. But if you're an editor, like I do so much editing on the go and I can't stand editing. Like now, even like a 16-inch MacBook Pro seems like a small screen when you work off a second screen all the time for editing. So that's not at this price point. That would be my use case, Rob, would be second screen on the go. I don't know about the briefcase.
It's
carrying
big.
Around. People might think you are up to something else, but
it's big and pricey for that because I actually have a portable screen and it looks like an iPad Pro. It's just a screen with a cover that protects the screen when you put it in your bag. But it's so much smaller than this. It's the form factor of this thing. I mean, when we say it's a suitcase, it literally, it's a briefcase. It's the size of an actual briefcase. So it's not little. It's a big hunking device. So
it looks
kinda,
like an
it's just
old
kinda
laptop. Like it's big and bulky like that. Okay. So, all right. So I don't know. This was like at least 2 months ago. I don't even know where I came across this, but it was on LG's Korean site. You could only get it. I couldn't. LG is weird. They don't have good translation, on their website in general. But it was not something that I could really read about in detail, and I also couldn't buy it without some fancy footwork. But I was like looking at these photos and thinking, what is this? And it started to make the rounds. And now, yeah, at IFA in Berlin, people are showing like, oh, it's that LG funny briefcase tablet television thing that's for camping or picnics. By the way, LG has people at, hanging out at picnics happily with it open. So it is at least in some sense supposed to be a picnic thing. It's pricey. It apparently does not have the best screen ever, and it makes very little sense to me, and that's why I like it so much.
Does it have a battery in that big old case? I mean, is it going to power all of your stuff while you're camping with it? I'm just trying to figure out why
it's
is
got,
it so big?
It's HDMI in the back, AC power. I think that's it. This is a novelty item. However, okay, so back when I had seen this a couple of months ago, I showed some people, I was like, am I just missing the point here? Tell me why there's a point of this besides it just being a crazy product. And one of my friends was like, well, my boyfriend works in surgery and sometimes he has to do like remote, heart tests of patients. This could be a really great way for the patient to, if he's in another room or otherwise remote, to be able to see the stuff. And I'm like, you don't need a briefcase to do that.
So wait, while the person's getting heart surgery, they're looking at this or like they're just sitting
like,
in the
let's say I was an anesthesiologist, right? And I'm helping you, Roger, remotely from a place not right by your side. She was like, well, maybe they could open up the briefcase and have it next to the patient. I was like, no, that's not what we're doing here.
This is where you are.
Sure, maybe, but you've got other options.
So,
did they have like a bunch of like these aluminum briefcases laying around? And they said, hey, what are we going to do with these briefcases?
This is my thought. Ever since SkyMall went away, this is all the products that would have been funneled into SkyMall. But now, since they don't have that outlet, they say, well, you know what? Why don't we pitch it as like a premium, if not premium performing video display in a briefcase, because it covers all those novelty aspects you were saying, Sarah, where it's a questionable use case, but you get it more because it's a conversation starter and you bring it to parties or gatherings or whatever. And people are like, ooh, what is that? And that's the kind of thing that SkyMall excelled at selling to people, or at least showcasing. This is a leftover of Sky Mall.
I can see that, actually.
This is a child of Sky Mall.
No, I'm still fighting for it.
It's the most expensive thing at Sharper Image.
If this included the computer, like if they wedged in like a nice like multi-core Intel laptop into like the lid or something, or you know, had a LCD projector, so it's like, hey, I'm gonna do movie night or something. It just feels like, well, then you got to have another briefcase of stuff to connect it to. Like it should be all in one.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? When I went off to college in the early 90s, this is before laptops were in the range that regular people could actually afford them. So I actually had a typewriter in a case to where, you know, you would take the case off and then you had your typewriter and you could type in it. And this is kind of what that reminds me of, except there is nothing for you to type on. It's like all you could do is plug other stuff into it to consume media. This is very strange, but the Sharper Image, the Sky Mall references, I think they are apropos because this is exactly where you would see something like that.
If this was a luggable PC, like in the original compact luggable PC days, where it's not a laptop, but it's not a desktop, it's something you lug around and plug into a wall, that would make more sense than just having a monitor and a briefcase, because it feels like you were just a little too clever with your grandparents' leftovers. Like, oh, they have a TV, and oh, Grandpa used to have this metal briefcase he used to have, so I'm going to put it all together, and then we're going to make like
LG's like, we happen to have like a million of them. What do we put in them? I mean,
so that's not unusual. So back in the early 80s, there was a video game console called the Vectrex, if anyone old enough remembers, and the only reason that came about is because one of the founders scored a great deal on oscilloscope monitors in Hong Kong, because there was like, it had like 2,000 or something he could buy dirt cheap for like a quarter on the dollar. And so he bought all of them, and he was like, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And the other partner said that, why don't you just turn it into video games? And that's what they did. And now it's stuff of retro video game collectors, because that's what it was. It was leftover. Anytime you see something online for either, if it's Amazon or AliExpress, and you're wondering like, who thought this would be a good product? What it was there's a bunch of leftovers. How do I make this into something I sell? It's like taking a bunch of old t-shirts.
I wonder how, like, the more that we talk about this, and I don't know why I like this product so much. I'm not even going to buy it.
It's quirky.
It's quirky. And it just like, there are precious few products these days that, you know, because we get into so much minutia of like, oh, you know, is the bezel thin enough on this new $1,200 smartphone that I'm thinking of buying? You know, a lot of this stuff is like, we're really splitting hairs, like literally. And then you get a product like this where it's like, what is this for? I don't know how many products I really see like this these days. I mean, unless you're like in like the like fun yard section of CES, but even then, you don't see a lot of kind of like wacky just for fun products.
Like the Billy Bass. We had to get rid of all these
sure,
voice chips.
That was so not last year's CES hit.
No, but I still think this is like LG cranked out a bunch of these monitors, and sounds like, what do we do with them? They're not that great, and no one's just going to buy it by themselves where they can get a much cheaper but better product. Why don't we just cram it into a beef? I do not think someone said, like, we need to start up a line, like brand new line, new tooling, everything, just to crank this out.
This is just like scrap metal that they just made
this
fun.
This is like, I got three warehouses full of these briefcases. How do I get rid of them?
You might be right. And if so, I want to hear the story. I want to know more. I need more weird products. Thank you in advance. Oh, by the way, speaking of thank you in advance, if you say TYIA to somebody in a text or whatever, shorthand, would you expect them to know what you mean?
TYIA?
Thank you in advance. Because I said that to somebody yesterday, and they were like, I don't know your weird internet slang, Sarah. And I was like,
But no one ever says thank you in advance to me anyway. So it would have to me when I, well, if I see a, that, it seems a, like it's like life
insurance. It's a cheeky way to say, like, do this.
Yeah.
Right? If I say, like, hey, Roger, smile, thank you in advance. It's like,
well, if you're really my boss, you're telling me to do it anyway. Does it make it any nicer?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. It's part of those office dynamics I often think
just
is
trying to be polite.
It's whatever you mean by it. Yeah. I was sort of like, oh, yeah, I guess that's a good reminder that the internet acronyms of the world.
So what would be the initialism for no? How's no? Does no work?
H-N-D-N-W?
But like when there should be a snapper. How's no? Does no work?
You could make up whatever you want, Roger. And it's up to them to then feverishly Google search what it means. That you're
I do it all the time. All the time. You know, where it's like Urban Dictionary, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to find this out.
But if you go through Urban Dictionary, you'll find out like half of those things are just very passive aggressive ways of saying do something or I don't like you.
Yeah, but there are often times where it's like I can tell that whatever term that's being used is like it's understood that a lot of people know what it means. I'm just not one of those people. So I'm like, I need to know.
Am I the only one whose parents believe that LOL stands for lots of love?
No, you're not the only one. You're definitely not.
This is a true story. My father, who just turned 71. So he's not a spring chicken, but he's been using computers and phones since phones and computers have been. And he sends me and my sisters a message, and he's like, hey, just want to let you know that one of our very close family members, their aunt passed away. Oh, so he's telling us this, and it's like, oh, he's like, LOL. It's like, Dad, what's funny about that?
Yeah, did you?
He's like, what do you mean? I'm just telling you guys I love you. And it's like, what do you think LOL stands for? And he hits me with the lots of love. Now, this is probably 4 or 5 years ago. So I started looking for it after that, and it's like, yeah, I think that a lot of folks think that LOL stands for lots of love. It's like that was so inappropriate, the way that you actually used that.
This itself is its own meme of parents, or just, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have to be your parent or grandparent, but somebody who's just, I was on AOL chat not as much back in the day. It means lots of love.
Yeah, but I'm on that stance. I'm on that all day. Here's why. I've never LOL'd. Because are you actually laughing out loud when you send me an LOL? I highly doubt it. Like if I actually spoke to you right now, oh, really? You're laughing out loud right now? No. You know what I do? I write ha 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 like a psychopath that takes up multiple lines on your screen. Okay. Like a good little psychopath that I am. And that's how you know I'm laughing out loud. So LOL should mean lots of love.
One of my favorite ones, and this is just, again, it's like, it's all flair, right? Somebody I used to text back and forth with would say LMAO, you know what that means, but it was always LMAO, lots of O's at the end, you know, where I was like, he's just, you know, on one, you know, like, why do you're laughing out loud, off. Like, you just need the 1-0. And so I thought it was just him. Like, he doesn't know how to do it. But no, people do that. It's like a style thing. LMAO.
It's like X's and O's, like at the end of a letter.
Yeah.
Here's the thing for me. I'm dyslexic. So for the acronyms that are not like so common that I just recognize them as symbols. And like, I know what LOL is. I know what, you know, like, what is it? Rolling on the floor.
Well, that's great.
I know what those are because you see them so often. I'm sitting here trying to read. It's like, oh, wow. I'm struggling today. I don't understand what that word means until like my wife will often say, oh, that's an acronym. That's like, oh, okay. And then I actually try to figure out what it is based off of that. But just the way my brain works, when I generally see acronyms, I don't perceive them as such. They're words that I'm just struggling to read, in the moment. So I'm not a big acronym person just for that, because it's like I'm literally trying to, what does this spell? It's like, let me pull my thesauruses out and see if I can find a similar word.
Poor Rob, it's confusing enough. Must we add another layer?
Yeah, honestly. You know?
And also, you guys, when's the last time any one of you have been actually rolling on the floor laughing?
Can't tell you.
I've recently rolled on the floor in pain, but not a lot of laughter.
Can we
Did
start
someone
that
laugh
acronym?
At you while doing that? Because that could be a new acronym. Like,
oh, that would
laughing
just be cool.
While watching that, someone that would, rolling on the floor.
That would be Mean Girls, right? That would just.
Yeah, I have this picture of Roger, you on the floor rolling over, and every time your face up, ouch, and then continue to roll, ouch. Ouch.
So in the Asian universe, there was a term for like Asian folks that would go to clubs and totally like get shit or drink too much and just kind of be all over the floor. And that used to be raisin, right? That would be a
all
rolling
over the
Asian
floor?
On the floor.
That's a fun
and
bar.
Then it, then they added crazen, the C in front of it to emphasize another substance being introduced into their behavior. And now when I think of those, like rolling on the floor, that's like, Ella, that's immediately the picture I have is some Asian person, probably me, rolling on the floor out of control. It's probably meaningless.
I've got a friend. I should ask Patrick Beja about this because this isn't the French-speaking friend
thing?
That I'm going to talk about. It's not a Finnish thing, but a French-speaking thing. But a friend of mine who does not speak very good English, and my French is pretty terrible. But my French slang is really bad because you have to, you know, you learn that over time, right? It's not really a textbook thing. Like Duolingo is not going to tell you about this. But he would say MDR, MDR. When, you know, I said something that was funny, you know, and it would often be accompanied with like a, you know, crying, laughing face. So I'm like, oh, he's laughing. But like, what's the MDR? Mort de rire, dying of laughter. It's a little French slang thing. I'm just going to give you guys for free.
Many famous. It
took me a while. Like, I was like embarrassed to ask. I was like,
passed away.
MDR?
There's a section in the cemetery where everyone just, it's just a laughing row. Everyone died. Of laughter. Comedy.
Roger Chang. What I'm are sorry. You talking about?
The catacombs. I don't know.
You know, every cemetery has it. It's kind of always on the, you know, the perimeter.
So it's off to the side.
It's the people who died of laughing. Yeah, I know.
Wait, when you laugh out loud, is it like screaming laughter or is it just like a snicker? Like,
no, you have to actually... Something has to leave your mouth. Your vocal cords have to have been engaged in some way.
Yeah, make a sound.
And correct.
It happens. I can think of times when I've read something or watched something, you know, like that out, you know, out loud, the actual thing that you're doing. So I guess if you use the acronym in that situation, it would be appropriate.
I'll count it. But if you just, you know, that sound of like it's like a, almost out of your nose a little bit where you're like, that was like a clever, like, that doesn't count.
No, you have to sort of lose control. Like to the point where if you had, you know, a drink of water or coffee in your mouth, you might, you're laughing out loud. You're making a mess.
Spit take.
Yeah.
I haven't done one of those in a while.
Spit take. Ever met a person, here's a good one. Now that I'm thinking about laughing, ever met a person who doesn't laugh? This was actually a Seinfeld episode. And I remember when it aired, I was like, oh my gosh, they're speaking to me. Like a person who goes, that's funny.
You mean like they do a guffaw or a chuckle, but not a...
No, they just, they give you positive reinforcement, but they're not actually, they don't laugh.
It's very...
I've known people like this before, where once you notice it, you're like, now it's a challenge. And they just go like, oh, you're so funny.
I would say like, maybe my old English teacher in high school. But I think it's more because he was just fed up with the class in general. And that sort of was an overwhelming.
Roger, you don't know your old English teacher well enough outside of the classroom to know.
I mean, does
Roger's
anyone
like,
know
maybe,
any of their high school teachers outside of the
sophomore
classroom?
Sophomore year.
Usually like, that was like a verboten thing. It's like, I see you at the office, which is the school, and that's it. If I happen to see you in the supermarket, I'll just like nod and say, hey, don't forget to
It was always so
term.
Weird when you saw your teacher out in the real world, and you were like, oh,
right.
my God.
So during the summer, I mean, I'm not sure for all the teachers across the U.S., but at least in Northern California, Central California, a lot of the teachers worked the canneries during the summer, right? Because you're not, you know, to make money. And so I would occasionally see them you know, because the cannery was really close to where I used to drive to get to my dad's restaurant. And so I would just like occasionally like see him on the road. It's like, hey, that's Mr. So-and-so. I guess he's, you know, canning something, probably tomatoes. It's kind of weird. One time, I'm trying to remember. One of my classmates ran into our English teacher outside of school and says like he purposely tried to hide from her, like to obscure his face so she wouldn't see him. And we started having this whole conversation that maybe he was just in a witness protection program, and he that was his cover, was being a high school English teacher. Because I don't know any of their histories. It's not like your teacher comes with a biography when the new year starts.
I used to go to a YMCA camp in the summer when I was too young to be left home by myself, kind of thing. And my parents both worked, you know, so I had to go somewhere. It was really fun. But at least at my particular summer camp thing, all the counselors had like funny names. And, you know, for 7-year-olds, it was great. You know, I don't even remember any of their real names, but it was like chipmunk and, you know, cutesy things that kids like. And I remember seeing one of the counselors with my mom. I was with my mom, like we were in a grocery store or something. And I was like, Chim Chim, you know, and he was like, Papa, don't stop that.
People are watching.
Not a camp this right now. I'm an adult.
You know? Listen, this could get law enforcement attention I don't need.
So it was I was like, you know, afterwards I was like, why was he weird? And my mom said, well, you know, maybe it's just like a camp name, you know, that, you know, there are people outside of camp. And I was like, they are? I thought they lived there and only existed to play, you know, I don't know.
So wait, their name
ball
was just, so their name tag said chipmunk on it, or
it wasn't. They didn't have tags. It was just like cutesy names that they had, you know. So the kids thought it was more fun, you know. You had a lot of kids like crying in the morning, getting dropped off, like no, you know, that kind of thing.
It's like kindergarten every day. This well, not for me, but for a couple other parents dropping their kids off at school, kindergarten, crying.
It's tough for everybody. Tough for all.
Not for the parents, because, man, I need to get away from this kid for at least 5 hours.
Rudder's like, cry all day. See ya.
Yeah, your problem. See ya. Yeah,
she'll be I had fine. A friend from college. His nickname in college was Half-Baked. So you know why his nickname was that.
I could guess,
but
yeah.
Everybody just called him HB for short, to the point to where I never knew what his actual first name was. So it's like I remember having to introduce him to it might have been like my parents or someone who I knew's parents or something like that, who, you know, who are in the dorm. And I'm like, I just called him HB, you know, hoping that they would ask why. But his initials weren't HB. It's like I can't remember what his name is. I mean, it could be Chris or whatever, but it was just funny. It's like, well, I don't want to call him Half-Baked in front of, you know, his roommate's parents. But it was just kind of weird, you know. Nicknames kind of stick. And it's like, you know, I don't think you would want to, like, be in a work setting being called Half-Baked.
But HB, I mean, it's initialism, so it could be like Harvard Brown or... It,
you know, yeah, they might do HBC. Are you a banker? That sounds pretty cool.
I'm a lawyer, you know. Sure. They always go by initials and a last name.
There are people that I refer to either by their last name, which is... You can usually figure that out, but it's not very formal, depending on the situation. Or yeah, like initials that are inside jokes of some sort that don't translate well. Like even if someone's like, oh, what's that mean? And you explain, you're like, you know what? Just shouldn't be said out loud. It's just what their name was. Yeah, like, here's where HB came from. HB's employer. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
He likes potatoes and only half baked cooked.
Yeah. Half-baked potatoes. Right. Twice baked. Yeah, half baked potatoes. Ooh, that doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, I probably haven't seen HB in 30 years, but if I were to meet him today, he's like a youth pastor or something like that. He's just going, half-baked, how you doing, man? It's like, how would he respond to that? I wouldn't do that.
You never found out his name?
I did, but I just can't remember.
He was half-baked.
Yeah. It's like that, you know, he wasn't a close friend. He was just someone who lived in my dorm, and that's what everybody referred to him as. So I can't remember what his first or last name is. I just know that we called him. I'm picturing him, and we called him Half-Baked. So like I said, I can't introduce you to these half-baked people's parents as Half-Baked, so I'll just call HB.
You go up to, like, he's a youth pastor, and it's just, oh, good.
Yeah, he could probably find some great reason to tell the youths that what half-baked was. Like, I was half-baked as a, I don't know, I got nothing.
In the womb? Like, what are you, my mom gave me this nickname.
Right? Yeah. Before I was born, I was half-baked, get it?
Well, you know what the audience gives us? A lot of support.
What's that, Roger?
And I'd like to give a shout out to Zoe for cheering us on today in the Twitch chat with Bits and everyone else who's been commenting. Great comments, by the way, in the chat room on the Twitch chat during the entire show.
Indeed. Over on the Patreon side, I mentioned Brian joined us as a new patron. Thank you again, Brian. We also got a real nice raise by Kevin. Kevin, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate all of you who are our patrons. And if you know somebody who might become a patron, let them know about the show or give them a nudge. That direct supporting of DTNS gives you all sorts of perks. And they can find more about that at patreon.com/DTNS. Well, I think that does it for our show today. Teja Custodi, thank you so much for being with us. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you all so much for having me. I appreciate you.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
You too.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was. We're back doing it again tomorrow. As I mentioned, Rob DeMillo and Len Peralta will be with us. Don't miss it. It'll be fun Friday. Might even have a quiz in GDI after the show. Have a good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.